Thanks for joining us for the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. MassMEP believes that there are some elements to a manufacturer's business, whether it's finding their inefficiencies, strengthening their internal processes, or even unlocking their growth, that can extend a manufacturer beyond its current limitations. So every episode, take a journey with us as we speak with manufacturers, legislature, subject matter experts, and so many more as we head down the path of manufacturing across the state of Massachusetts. Whether we're in Boston, Worcester, or out in Springfield, maybe even in the Berkshires, we'll be here every week and we'll explain to you more about manufacturing and what's happening right in your own backyard. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast. I'm Haley Steele.
And I'm Emma Mailman.
And welcome back. It is almost another month into the year, going into month five already, May. Crazy.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Insanity, but we're here. Today we have two guests with us and we're talking about something that's a little bit of a new spin on things that some of you out there listening in the manufacturing world may not necessarily know exists, but really should listen and take part in what this opportunity will bring your way, because it might open your eyes to another, I'm going to say, layer of your workforce. So we are here today. We are talking about hiring the next generation of talent for your organization. So if you're responsible for hiring manufacturing, engineering, or technology candidates for your organization, this is a great opportunity for you to connect with the talented students of Carver High's Innovation Pathways program. Yes, I said students of Carver High. So our guests we have with us today, we have with us Meredith and Greg. Meredith is the Director of Curriculum Instruction and Technology for Carver Public Schools. Welcome, Meredith, and hello.
Thank you so much, Haley and Emma. It's so nice to be with you. And I'm excited to be here to represent our Innovation Pathway program.
Super. She's also going to tell us a lot about it as well, too. So, and also with us, one of our favorites, we have Greg Howell with us. Greg is the president of Flexo Concepts. Welcome to the podcast, Greg.
Thank you, Haley. And thank you, Emma. And I'm excited to be here as well to help support Meredith and tell about this exciting program that Carver High School is doing.
Yeah, super. Yeah, so you'll learn a little bit about how Greg and Meredith's path intersect. Greg being a manufacturer can give us that manufacturer side on this whole thought process and the Innovation Pathway program. So we'll make that connection so that those of you out there get a better understanding as to why we're here today. But before we do that, we always ask our guests an icebreaker question. And so the icebreaker question I have for you today is, it's kind of a two-part icebreaker question. Books. What are your favorite types of books to read? So nonfiction, fiction, romance novels, sci-fi, and are you still a trophy reader and like flipping the pages, or have you transitioned into this world of Audible books? What do you prefer? So how about Meredith, ladies first, go ahead.
Thank you, Haley. So I love this question, being a representative from the K-12 education space. I do love books, and I tend to consume a lot of nonfiction, in part because I like to expand my horizons, but also because I just got done with some schooling of my own. And so there was little time for fiction, but every time I do read fiction, I feel like I've gone on vacation somewhere. So I appreciate that escapism. And I think being in a 3-year doctoral program really forced me to re-examine the audiobook and those opportunities. And so I actually have become kind of a hybrid learner in that regard. I will read a real book, and then I will also listen to books when I drive, and it's made me a better driver.
Ah.
Yeah, because I get focused on the content instead of the person that just blew past me that I want to yell at.
That's a great point. I love it, Meredith. That's so good. Awesome. All right, Greg, how about for you?
Yeah, you know, I too am a fan of nonfiction books, and you know, it's probably no surprise that in the later years of my life, I've also become a fan of documentaries, which are kind of the television form of nonfiction literature. My wife frequently accuses me of aging faster than I should based on the number of documentaries I tend to watch. But you know, it's interesting. I was just thinking about the two most recent books I've read or listened to, and I have started doing some audiobooks. The most recent book I read is something called The Bitcoin Standard, which is a great book about kind of the history of hard money. And for anyone interested in the world of Bitcoin, I would encourage you to start with that book. It's absolutely fantastic. And another book I listened to recently, which is based on fact but very different, was a biography or a story about the Black Crowes, which is a rock band. It was written by their drummer, a guy named Steve Gorman, and it was called Hard to Handle. It's kind of his story about the band and the 25 years he spent with the brothers Robinson, who are notoriously difficult to get along with. But those are the two things I've taken in most recently. Very different, but I am much like Meredith, all about nonfiction.
That's awesome. And do you prefer, Greg, like, are you a trophy reader? You like the paper, like flipping the pages, or are you good? Do you like the Audible, a little bit of both?
You know, I like both. I have some friends with extensive book collections, and they're very proud of them, and I've always been impressed by that. But I don't know that I was ever an avid enough reader to build a physical library. So that has never really been as important to me as just kind of enjoying the content.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So it's I know, and you know, we asked this question, and it kind of does help us kind of transition into why we're here. And we're talking about it when we talk about the technology side of it with us. You know, we have Audible today, or we were talking earlier and saying, you know, you're on a podcast. And then all the four of us were kind of saying, do we all listen to podcasts? So getting into technology and where we are today and talking about students, I think what we want to do, and Meredith, you are going to be best for this, but we want for you, if you could provide a brief overview of what the innovation pathway is. You know, how is it involved with, how are students involved? How does it affect them and families? And then how does it kind of relay into the manufacturers?
Absolutely. So thank you for that question. So I'm going to give kind of the overarching state level view, and then I'll distill it down to what students here are experiencing. But the innovation pathway was actually put forth by, I think, the Governor's Council and Workforce Development Board, channeled through the Department of Education several years ago. And the idea was, by the year 2027, they were hoping that 50% of high school students within the Commonwealth would either be involved in an innovation pathway or an early college track. And the state set up a variety of requirements and a grant application that comes in kind of multiple steps. And so the innovation pathway, the intention of that, was really prompted by what I'm sure many of your listening manufacturers are experiencing, and that is a real kind of deficit in the workforce. And how do we make sure that students who are here as K through 12 learners, how do they actually visualize themselves as workers within the Commonwealth, being able to contribute and to earn a sustainable wage, and what skills can kind of be embedded into their K through 12 experience so that they're successful. So we talk a lot about transferable skills and employability skills. And then to make sure that schools aren't just kind of shooting in the dark in terms of defining these programs, the state really said, we want you to partner with your local workforce development board, so your Mass Hire board, and look at your regional blueprint, which is a document that each Mass Hire board has, where they've actually gone through with economists and they've done workforce projections, and they've defined some priority areas, typically 5 different priority areas. Sometimes they change a little bit, but areas where in the next 5 to 10 years, there is going to be a real need to turn to schools and to colleges and community colleges and trade schools to churn out workers that have these skills that employers are desiring, and really making sure that that pipeline continues throughout. So that's the intention of the innovation pathway from kind of the state view. And then from the school view, there's a real interest in answering the question that I'm sure all of us have asked at various times in our own schooling, and that is, why do we have to learn this? So as you reflect on your own learning, maybe it was, you know, you saw yourself more as a reader than a math student, or maybe you loved math and calculus, but you weren't so fond of history. So at some point, every student is like, why am I sitting here? Why do I have to learn this? And the answer to that is, we want learning to really be a relevant experience for students. And by a relevant experience, we want students to be able to take their learning, their new skills, and apply it. We want them to tinker, to wonder, to play, but to really at the end of the day be able to solve problems, to be critical thinkers, and to really develop these habits of mind that can carry over into their adult lives and into the workforce. And we find that when we do that, students are naturally more invested, they're more engaged. And some of the challenges that teachers sometimes have about how do we ignite this passion in students, that no longer becomes an issue, because students see themselves as drivers of their own learning, and they're naturally invested in kind of proving themselves and doing the best that they can. So from the school side, there is just a lot of emphasis on that. And that's really the springboard for why we have seen that this type of programming works for students.
Meredith, how long have you had the Innovation Pathways program?
So officially, we were designated last year at about this time and launched it this past fall. So we are still in our inaugural year. With that said, we've been studying and preparing for it for a couple of years. And then COVID obviously served a little bit like sandpaper or jelly or whatever. As we were running forward, we had to slow down and kind of adjust our pace to some of those challenges. And in doing so, it gave us the gift of another year to be able to prepare pedagogically and really to embrace the paradigm shift. Because a lot of us, when we were going through our own, student teaching, our own pre-service experience, didn't have the opportunity to teach like this.
That's a positive outlook coming out of COVID right there, huh? I like your sandpaper analogy.
Yeah.
Is this the only program at Carver, or do you guys offer other programs as well?
Thank you for asking that. So along with my high school principal and my school superintendent and a group of eager teachers, we really used some metrics about our own school to diversify and create what we're calling Carver Pathways, which is different than Innovation Pathways. But we realized that every year between, 20 and 25 or 20 and 30% of our students were graduating without a concrete plan. So we had a huge percentage of students that knew that they were college bound. We had some that were military bound, some that knew that they would go into the workforce, but we had too large of a percentage of students that didn't know what they were going to do post-graduation. So in doing so, teachers got together, and we actually have 8 different pathways that are available for students in high school. Sometimes they dip down into 8th grade and some exploration at the middle school level. But in order to qualify for the state designation of innovation pathways, there are parameters that we have to meet. So right now, the only one that we have that is state designated as an innovation pathway is manufacturing, engineering, technology, but we were just approved to start next year with environmental and agricultural sciences. So
that's very exciting. You said that very humbly, but that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's great. And you know, it's been a huge team effort, not just from teachers and administrators, but really capturing student voice. And then when Greg explains kind of his role, I think one of the most beneficial pieces is talking to business and the influence that Greg and his insights have had on our program have been invaluable. So I'm grateful for these 8 programs. I'm grateful for the fact that teachers are looking at de-siloing content and really having these kind of interdisciplinary experiences. And I can give you some examples of those later, but we're very excited about this opportunity to innovate.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure all the students are pumped too. They spend all year working on, you know, whatever project they may be working on. They finally have a platform to showcase it, and they're showcasing it to people that they might be working with in the future or working for in the future. You never really know. So I think it's wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So now you dove into some of the aspects of the showcase, but overarching goal, what would you say is kind of the main thing that either you want the students to get out of this or everyone in general? Is there one goal that you're hoping to reach?
Yes. And actually, I'm going to plagiarize my thoughts on that based on yesterday's state level STEM summit, which was an effort. There's an annual summit every year from the STEM Advisory Board, which is a state level organization. And one of the things that they really talked about is that when we have programs like this, when we have showcases like this, it gives industry an opportunity to interact with some of these changes that tend to be innovative and new within schools. And if the last time someone stepped within a school was when they themselves were graduating from high school, or maybe they have children that are in the elementary level and they're not really sure how high school opportunities have changed, this gives industry a chance to inform and to a degree to benefit from these changes as much as it does for the school to benefit from industry's persuasion and their feedback. So at the STEM Summit yesterday, they were talking about just a vast number of statistics around why this type of work is so important. For example, they said that right now the workforce ecosystem is struggling, that by 2030, there will be 2.1 million unfilled manufacturing jobs across the United States. And that's according to US News and World Report. Bloomberg also did a study. I guess every year they identify the top 10 innovation countries based on an innovation index. And for the first time last year, the United States dropped out of the top 10. And I think that, you know, regardless of whether you're a STEM person or whether you're an economist or you just want to make sure that, you know, your retirement and your pension pay off and you're able to live at that time, you know, I think there's a vested interest in terms of economic health and in terms of the strength of kind of our experience to make sure that this pipeline is fed not only here in Carver, but really around the country. So I think there is a lot of focus on that.
Yeah, I love that. It really highlights that partnership too. So both sides, so employers and the current students that will be future employees, just learning off each other, benefiting each other, not having it be a one-way street, but being able to take each other's experiences, perspectives, knowledge, and work together toward a common goal. I think that's kind of the overarching goal for ourselves right now too, is to kind of highlight that break between the communication or maybe even the perspective of what you mentioned. Do we even know what's going on in high schools right now, what the curriculum is like, or do we know the expectations in the workforce? So I think this is a really good opportunity to bridge that gap and bring both sides together to better understand each other.
I love that. I really do think too, when folks come in and have the opportunity to see it, I know I was in that space today and I thought, man, you know, if I had the opportunity to use a CNC milling machine as a high schooler, you know, what doors would have been open to me? And I think we'll hear from Greg in just a second. He's been very open to our manufacturing engineering technology teacher and, you know, opening up his space and sharing his experience, and his direct feedback has really informed where we've gone. So the idea that we can pull from industry and hear what it is that you're looking for and then marry that to how we teach is so important.
How did you get involved in this, Greg? Like, what was it that was it? Did you know Meredith before, or is this something that you've been passionate about, you know, at Flexo Concepts? Like, is this something just from you and you brought it to them? How did you, this get started?
Yeah, I have kind of a personal and professional kind of response to that. You know, at a personal level, my son, who's now a freshman in college, as he was going through middle school and high school, was very interested in technology and software programming. Mm-hmm. And, I was frustrated at the lack of exposure he was able to get in the school system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we opted to do some private summer camps that he went to. You know, he probably did four or five of them over 4 or 5 years, and really developed an interest in software programming, and that led to him getting involved in the robotics club at his high school. But I guess as a parent, I've been a little disappointed at the pace at which high school curriculums have kept pace with what seems to be happening in the private sector. Mm-hmm. I'm with a partner. I own a manufacturing company here in Plymouth, and we are, you know, kind of living and breathing in a professional way on a daily basis this challenge of acquiring talent. I think historically manufacturing more recently manufacturing has a certain perception connected to it and a certain image that doesn't necessarily appeal to the broadest of audiences. And because of that, I got involved with the Mass Hire Workforce Development Board a few years ago, and that led to me getting involved in a manufacturing advisory board with the South Shore chapter of Mass Hire. And kind of the specific intent there was to, create a promotional video and create some literature that tried to show manufacturing in a more attractive light. And it was through my relationship with Mass Hire that a woman named Laura Buckley introduced Meredith and I. One of the requirements for Meredith's program is that they have someone from industry as a representative kind of on their team. So it was suggested that I meet with Meredith and David Aruda, who is the STEM professor at the school. I think I had actually met David before I had met Meredith, but David came to our facility and I was just really taken with his enthusiasm for what he was trying to do. And, you know, I felt like finally here's a high school teacher that gets it, that really sees the need to expose students, you know, and don't get me wrong. I'm as big a fan of the core curriculum requirements of English, history, math, science. But I feel like we're at a point where, you know, technology either needs to be introduced parallel to that, or longer term, what would be more ideal is if it's integrated into those core studies. You know, wouldn't it be great at some point if a physics class is taught from a textbook that includes, you know, the Python programming language, so people can see the intersection of tech and physics, or that a math class might be taught with some chapters done in programming. You know, the rant, I haven't been on it in a while, but a rant I've often gone on is, you know, here we sit, you know, 35 miles south of one of the best technology hubs in the world, and we have public schools within spitting distance of the city of Boston that aren't offering computer science classes or aren't giving students a chance to opt into a programming class. And I think the future of all those disciplines, whether it's sales, marketing, finance, engineering, accounting, whatever, human resources, all of those disciplines are the future of them, I think, involves some intersection of the traditional versions of those disciplines and technology. I mean, we see it in our business every day. You know, we, as a manufacturer, we have those traditional departments. We have marketing, sales, engineering, accounting, manufacturing, customer service, and all of them are done with a heavy exposure to tech. And it's not to say that every person needs to be a programmer, but I think exposing people at the high school level to more technology and letting them maybe see career opportunities that maybe aren't are a little different than what they've been exposed to traditionally is something I'm very passionate about. So it was when I met David and Meredith and I learned about this program, I was excited to be a part of it.
Do you guys have a lot of additive or advanced manufacturing that you use at Flexo, Greg?
We do. You know, we do both additive and subtractive. So, you know, we have a fully capable machine shop here with a bridge port and a lathe and very traditional subtractive manufacturing equipment. But we also have two 3D printers that run most every day. So we kind of have bridged that gap, and, you know, it's interesting because it's fun to watch engineers go from one world to the other. You know, when you take somebody that has made things by putting pieces together and now they're going to design parts that are done through an additive manufacturing process. When I say putting things together, you know, when you take someone that has welded and attached metal to other metals to construct things and now does it on a 3D printer, it's a very different design process. And we've got some really young, talented engineers that have really had that aha moment with regard to 3D printing. But on occasion, you'll see one of them welding something at the same time. So we're fortunate to kind of have the best of both worlds.
If somebody's like, you know what, this really could be, we've talked about it, right? We've said, are we missing out on this? You know, is this niche of this market, is this what we need to be targeting when it comes to the next generation, the next pipeline into this workforce? So if they have really no idea that anything like this exists, kind of how would you help them understand or maybe where to start to look into something like this?
Yeah, you know, I think if someone's in manufacturing, they likely have experienced challenges in hiring. You know, there's that said, we still struggle in this region to attract talent. And, you know, one of the things we really think a lot about and talk about is, as a manufacturer, we don't feel like we're in competition for employees just with other manufacturers. We feel like we're in competition with the best places to work in our region. So, you know, we've tried hard in the environment of our workspace and the culture of our employee. And by really focusing on technology, we very much consider ourselves a technology company that happens to be a manufacturer. And we have tried to create kind of a progressive version of a manufacturing company so we can attract people that are bright and smart and want to be part of things that are exciting. I think one of the things that everyone may not know about these career pathway programs is, you know, I think one of the things we talk about a lot too is, you know, in some cases these innovation pathway programs may allow students to get exposed to engineering or tech, and it may heighten their interest in going to college to study that. On the other hand, it may give students who don't have an intention to go on to secondary education an idea of careers that might be right for them. And I think as we look at our local geography, to me, that is a big opportunity. Not every student coming out of Carver is going to go to secondary education. And to go and, you know, at the showcase we'll have next week, to see what these kids are learning, to see, as Meredith said, there's a CNC milling machine there. There's 3D printers. They're learning programming through some of the, you know, the now available robotics platforms and applications that that students are getting exposed to it at a very early age. And you can start to see kids coming out of a high school with a skill set that may allow them to be entry-level employees at manufacturing organizations that that know that, you know, we've got to go deeper down the pipeline to find talent. You know, the days of just being able to hang your we're hiring shingle on the door and have people walk in are gone in the manufacturing space. And you know, it's a long game. You know, it's interesting. I know Meredith's vision for these and the school's vision is a very long view of it. And I think as manufacturers in the region, we have to have a long view too, and not just to see what these programs are capable of producing in terms of students, but also influencing the curriculum. You know, and I think that's a big part of the connection that Meredith hopes to get by linking with industry or companies from within industry is to see what they need. And that's what I've tried to impart on David and her team, just some of the skills, both technical and kind of more generic that we're looking for when we hire people.
Yeah. Obviously you can go for anybody that it has more interest in learning more about this. We'll definitely talk about the specifics of the showcase, and we want to hit, you know, the dates, times, you know, how to register and that. But for those that are manufacturers that are listening, these programs exist all across the state. So it's just finding somebody local, and then it's that connection and reaching out and saying, you know, reaching out to, and maybe Meredith, you might be able to give a little bit insight too, if they are reaching out, you know, who should they be making that connection with, and then helping them, you know, learn a little bit more about this. And that's why I think we wanted to do this, because we thought this was so important, because this is an amazing program that does exist. And we do want other people in the state, other manufacturers, even schools to see. I think it's great. We always say, you know, we work for continuous improvement, and that's what we do at MassMEP. That's how, you know, who we are to our core. And so as part of that, you know, we are connected with what we would per se competitors, but we learn from them, you know, them offering what they do, and we learn, and then that helps us grow, and vice versa. So what's nice is to be able to have that go both ways. And so for those manufacturers that it's all across the state. You know, I'm looking at a website, and what I'm looking at, you know, you probably can dig into it better, Meredith, and give a little bit more clear, you know, vision on it for people, but they're out there. They exist. And then, you know, who do they need to contact? And if it's something that they're interested in doing, you know, obviously the innovation pathways, like you said, Greg, you're connected. So you're kind of the champion that's connected to their program. Is that, you know, these advisory boards, we talk about them all the time, and we tell manufacturers all the time, you need to get on these advisory boards. They are huge. They are so important to these schools and to these, you know, to the districts and to mainly to the students. So get connected to those. So yeah, Meredith, fill us in on, you know, as a manufacturer, and I'm coming to you and I'm saying, how do I get connected? What do I need to do?
So the first thing I'll say is that the number of these programs, the intention is that they're going to grow. As I mentioned before, the initial state goal before anyone had ever heard of COVID-19 was to try to have half of all high school students in either this or an early college pathway by 2027. So granted, that metric will change or that target will change, but they are having more of these every single year. There is money to support that in the state budget. So if someone Googles Massachusetts Innovation Pathway, they would be able to get a little bit of information about that on the mass.gov website. And we currently happen to be the only manufacturing innovation pathway on the South Shore. But in working with other assistant superintendents and other folks in the area, more schools definitely want to come on board. But I'm looking here, there are small schools, big schools, rural schools, urban schools, everything in between that are starting to come on board with this. So I'm looking, Quabbin Regional High School out in Barrie has a manufacturing innovation pathway. And then I'm looking at another one that says manufacturing in Dudley, Mass, and then Blackstone Valley and Uxbridge Public Schools. They've had one since before we did. They were a great resource to us as we were going through the process and making sure that we were meeting all the parameters of the application and making those commitments. West Springfield, Worcester. So there are, like you mentioned, this is something that is statewide and it's an opportunity for schools and industry to really connect. So I would say Google that. Anyone is welcome to contact me and I can put them in contact with the head of innovation pathways from the Department of Education. And then the other thing I would say is if neither of those options feel comfortable, reaching out to your Mass Higher Workforce Development Board, because one of the initiatives from the state is to make sure that they're connecting to the local workforce boards and that this is a known opportunity slash commodity throughout the state.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, just to build on that, you know, I think the, you know, as Meredith's talking, I'm thinking, you know, where would we hope we might be 5 years from now? Imagine 5 years from now that the Carver Innovation Pathway Program has a strong brand, manufacturers in the region know what it is, and Carver High School has kind of become understood as this place where you can go and tap into recent high school graduates who are ready to work in the manufacturing sector if they've come out of this program. I don't know that we're there yet. Yeah. So I think we're in the brand building phase and kind of the information sharing phase where we want people, hopefully next Thursday, if they're in the region, to come out to Carver and see what's happening. And if not, to Meredith's point, they may find that there's a high school closer to them where they could get involved and they may be able to become an advisor to that program or at least take a close look at it and see how it might you know, fill some of the needs they have in their business.
Yeah, I think too, Greg, I think that's a great point. And it's almost like the stars will align because maybe Carver isn't at that point yet, but I think a lot of manufacturers, this is really new to them as well. And so this education that we're consistently trying to bring to them, and we said, is this that, are we missing the mark on what we really could be tapping into, you know, as a new piece of the pipeline? So it might happen. It might be right around the right timing. So if we can make this work, we will. So let's talk about the actual showcase. So let's give the specifics on the showcase, date, time, location, and what people need to do so that they can come and see this.
Thank you so much. So yes, we are hosting this next Thursday, which happens to be May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, and it's a drop-in anytime between 3 and 5 p.m. We understand that manufacturers and folks from business and industry are busy, so there is no formal agenda. You walk in, there will be a huge buffet of finger foods and sweet treats that are created by our award-winning culinary program. They just finalized the menu, so please come for that. And then you'll walk down into the actual maker space and into the classroom space that students will be in. They'll be able to share the different projects that they've been working on. They'll be working on machines while they're there. And we invite industry to talk to students and have them explain what they've learned and what skills they've benefited from or what skills they're developing and how they think this might extrapolate out into a career for them, and to really just engage with students. The students that are going to be showcasing range from 9th grade through 12th grade. And I'm in that space frequently. I'll just walk in and sit down and talk to students during the school day and say, you know, what are you working on? And it's very project-based. So typically there is a problem that they're trying to solve. They're given some parameters around that. They're given some expectations in terms of skill development, but they are responsible for collaboration, for taking feedback, for providing feedback, and for really engaging in the engineering design process so that they can perfect the prototype until they have a solution. So they're really, really excited to talk about that. We have a website that has been designed through our digital marketing campaign group, and Greg and Julia at Flexo Concepts have been amazing to support this. Julia set up an RSVP system through Eventbrite, so hopefully those links can be sent out or put on the podcast page. Yep. And we're just trying to get a head count for our culinary students, but if you don't have an opportunity to RSVP, please come anyways. It's very low key, and at the same time, we are so excited to host you. So please come.
And it's Carver High School, right, Meredith?
Carver Middle High School. It's off of South Meadow Road in Carver. So 60 South Meadow Road. If you know where the Plymouth Airport is, a small little airport, we're right nearby. And you can just come right in the front door, and there will be student greeters there to welcome you.
Awesome. But before we go, from each of you, what are you most looking forward to next Thursday from this event?
I'll go first, Meredith. I'll let you catch your breath there. I think for me, I'm thinking about it as Meredith is talking. When I met David, I said I was impressed with him, the teacher that's kind of leading this effort. I was even more impressed when I went to the school and saw what these kids were doing. To a point you made earlier, Haley, if you haven't been back in a high school since you were there, or maybe your exposure has been parent-teacher conferences, if you're in the manufacturing sector, I think you will be surprised at what these kids are getting exposure to. It's very concrete skills. It's concepts and learnings that are the same type of thing we're doing in the manufacturing environment every day. And that's the thing I'm excited about, is hoping we can get some people from the manufacturers at this event to see the look on their face or their reaction to, what they see these kids are actually doing at high school.
My wish, my dream, my aspiration in all of this is not dissimilar from Greg's. I think, to use a metaphor, I'm interested in building bridges. And when we're able to bridge that gap between business and industry and the K-12 space, I feel like it's a win-win. Mm-hmm. Because manufacturers really are able to help inform this next generation of employee. And our students are able to imagine a future that they may not have had experience with before. So I see it as a win-win.
So we want to make sure that everybody is there. So we will add the information. We will be able to put it into the actual podcast link, which will be on our website at massmap.org. So anybody that goes in, when they go in to listen, you'll have the link and you can go in and register as well. And then when it's over, we'll pull that down, because we don't want people to keep going back. But I'm pretty sure this is probably not going to be the last of these. So we'll be sure to let everybody know when we start working on these again. So yeah, thank you guys. I appreciate it for, being here today with us and joining us for the podcast. So yeah, hopefully we'll see everybody next Thursday, May 5th. Emma will be taking lots of pictures too. So if you want to photobomb any of her photos to put up for social media, just jump right in there. Yeah, exactly. You got it.
Photobombs are totally welcome.
Yeah. Yes, they are welcome. All right. Well, thanks everyone. Thank you for listening to the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast, transforming manufacturing enterprises. You can subscribe to our channel anywhere you listen to your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and you can always go to our website at massmap.org. So we'll see you next time, whether it's our space, your space, or cyberspace.